today, I do believe, outside of City Hall, which we didn't actually get to talk about details, but we will. Coming on up on KABU, you know you can hear about it here. Thank you very much. We'll be back next week, positively revolting, as ever. Thanks, Jose.
Thank you.
Triangle Productions and KABU Community Radio are proud to present Kiss of the Spider Woman. The Oregon premiere of this 7-time Tony Award-winning musical will be at The Sanctuary at 1785 Northeast Sandy Boulevard in Portland. The show will run from September 5th through the 29th. More information about this KABU-sponsored event may be found at kabu.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.
At KBOO, we have a dynamic community of 500 volunteers doing everything from front desk work, janitorial work, community reporting, hosting information booths, clerical support, news writing, documentary making, engineering live music, operating soundboards, working in the music library, and many, many other things. KBOO absolutely depends on volunteers to carry out the work of the station. We are always looking for new volunteers. We have monthly volunteer orientations, which is the first step in getting involved. Contact KBOO Volunteer Coordinator Annie Haynes about the next volunteer orientation at 503-231-8032 extension 231 or at volunteer@kabu.org.
And you are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is approximately 9:01 a.m., Coming up on KABU, we've got APA Compass, followed by Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia at 10 a.m., headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15 on Flashpoints, guest host Kevin Pina reports on the end of the largest prison hunger strike in U.S. history and speaks with Johnny Achi, a Syrian-American activist on the ground in Syria opposing a possible military intervention by the Obama administration, and interviews Professor John Quigley. And at 11 on It Takes a Village, Shahid Hamid hosts a call-in program on 50 years after the I Have a Dream speech, Where Do We Go From Here? Congressional Representative Alan Grayson was a guest on Democracy Now! This morning and mentioned a website, don'tattacksyria.com. There's no spaces and no punctuation in there. That website features a petition opposing military action in Syria that goes to members of Congress. That website is don'tattacksyria.com. Stay tuned for APA Compass.
Good morning. And thanks for tuning in to APA Compass, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio program. APA Compass airs the first Friday of each month at 9 a.m. on KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland. In this month's installment of Heart to Heart with Ka, collective member Ka Her responds to her listeners and presents 5 fun facts about school. Ka also interviews community organizer Dr. Thuy Tran on her grassroots campaign running for the Oregon House and how Asian Americans can get things done in the political arena. Also, Letitia Thomas presents an audio tribute to Afifa Ahmed Shafi. Afifa was a founding member of APA Compass, a community activist, and passed away far too young. But first, Luann Ogoso interviews Atsuko Okatsuka, actress, comedian, and co-founder of the Disoriented Comedy Tour.
TV or anything, because I know in LA I'm fairly unrecognizable. But in Japan, I'm totally unrecognizable. I've been in a movie called The Rock. Yeah, that's my friend. Yeah. exactly.
Hello, my name is Luann Olgoso, and you're listening to APA Compass. Today, we are speaking with Los Angeles-based writer, actress, and comedian Atsuko Okotsuka. She is also a co-founder of the first-ever all-female Asian-American stand-up comedy tour, Disoriented. The tour will be coming to Portland on Saturday, October 5th at the Helium Comedy Club. Welcome, and thank you for coming on the show today, Atsuko.
Thank you, Luann.
So tell us about how you started in stand-up.
Well, I started in stand-up through an all-female class called Pretty Funny Women, which I found on Craigslist telling jokes, I guess. Mm-hmm. I actually met my co-founder in the class, Jenny Yang.
How did the idea of starting a stand-up tour kind of come into play then?
You know, that wasn't until later, you know. We really just launched in last year, in 2012. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so since we took the class, we'd seen each other. We would see each other, you know, at different shows, you know, or we would be on the same lineup or not. We knew of each other from the class, you know. I think our other producer, who was, you know, with Disoriented Comedy, mm-hmm. Last year, mm-hmm. she is based out of Seattle, and I think her and Jenny started talking about the idea of an all-Asian female comedy show, mm-hmm. and then Jenny called me and asked if I wanted to be a part of it. So that's kind of how we started. Just, yeah, it's not like we hung out with each other all the time, so it was kind of, yeah, it was kind of funny, mm-hmm. you know, how we reunited to make this thing happen.
And how would you describe your comedy?
It's changed a little since I first started, you know. But right now, it's me ranting and being baffled and self-deprecating about a lot of things. I don't know if that's a good way of describing it, but those are the only adjectives that come to my mind, yeah. you know. Yeah. Just the baffling things about life, the things that happen to me that... You know, I want to make fun of myself for, or, you know, things that are ridiculous, I guess. A lot of ranting.
And what do you like most about being an Asian American comedian? And what do you like the least?
Huh. You know, there isn't something I really don't like about it. Mm-hmm. You know, because it's easy to play the woe is me, I'm a woman and Asian, and so I'm always the butt of the joke. Mm-hmm. It's easy to do that, mm-hmm. but that's only an issue if you allow it to be an issue, you know? what I like about it, you know, when I go on stage, I don't necessarily think of myself, I don't label myself as I'm an Asian, mm-hmm. you know, a female comic, mm-hmm. you know, I happen to be one. Mm-hmm. And the things I talk about aren't necessarily Asian-based. Sometimes they are because I am, so the situations that happen to me might be based on that, you know, like a little bit. Mm-hmm. Or how I react might be because of my Asian upbringing or whatever. Mm-hmm. But, I don't know. I like it, I guess, because... Yeah, I don't know. I think I just like stand-up, you know? There are, of course, some, like, sick perks that come out of it, inevitably, just being an Asian female, you know, going to shows or something. But that's a whole different thing.
And when you were doing the comedy class before, was that mostly sketch comedy or, like, improv?
No, it was all, like, stand-up.
Stand-up, okay. So it was, like... teaching how to be a stand-up comedian, pretty much.
Right, which is a strange idea, I guess. Yeah.
A little bit. I normally just hear of like sketch comedy or improv classes, but I haven't heard of a stand-up one before.
And people can take or not take what they want out of it, because how do you teach somebody to be funny? You know, you can't really. You can teach format, like improv formats and stuff like that, right? So that's why, like, sketch or improv is so prominent in teaching. But with stand-up, I mean, if someone's just not funny, maybe they're just not funny, you know? But, like, you could teach, like, okay, here's some equations to stand-up that, you know, usually work, you know, like listing things in threes, or the k sound is funny, you know, things like that. But yeah, so I mean, some people from my class don't even do stand up anymore, but I think it was just a good gateway to see if it was meant for you or not.
And I know that you do obviously you do other things as well. You act and write. I actually looked up the indie movie that you were in, Little Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And I read great reviews for it, and I wanted to know what your experience was like making that film.
It was great. You know, I co-wrote the film
mm-hmm.
with the director, Mike Ott, and he directed and I acted in it. Yeah, it's a very different art form from stand-up, in a sense, you know, because you're acting for a camera, which is like kind of a limited world, you know, playing a different character. And sometimes stand up, I feel like even if you're playing yourself, you're playing a character because you're being big for the stage, right? You're being big for the audience. G Little Rock takes place in the Antelope Valley in the desert near Palmdale, California. And then the second one we made, the sequel to that, is Pure Blossom Highway, which also takes place out there in the desert. And the one we just completed is called Lake Los Angeles. And yeah, they're all about kind of outsiders, or, you know, foreigners who come to the States and kind of getting stuck living in the desert, you know, without speaking English or with these hopes and dreams that maybe didn't live up, you know, to what they thought America was going to be like. And maybe it's kind of depressing. They're not comedies.
Does that kind of mirror your experience then? Because I know that you immigrated here from Japan.
Yeah, I mean, with Little Rock, you know, when director Mike Ott and I were writing it together, he allows a lot of space for his actors to tell their own story. Me coming to the States, not knowing English, trying to navigate around finding new friends, you know, the decisions I made sometimes might have been questionable because I wanted to fit in, blah, blah, blah. That kind of stuff did mirror in the film as my experience when I came here. I was only 10 when I came here, though, so. And in the film, I'm a lot older. Mm-hmm. But so, yeah, it's like me reliving my life in another world, you know. The second film is a little bit like that, too. It's kind of like once I've gotten to the States and started living here, how my life kind of turned out. And the third one is Mexican immigrant story, so it's completely different.
It's a great topic to cover and amplify on the screen as well. What do you prefer more, acting, stand-up, or writing?
My goodness. Well, I do like writing and stand-up a lot the most, I think, because it's more immediate in what you want to say, you know? With acting, you're kind of trying to interpret someone else's writing, or, you know, unless you had a part in writing it, of course. But if you didn't, then you're playing a character that someone else imagined, you know, which is a little more daunting.
Yeah.
Than being able to, you know, when you just write on a piece of paper, it's just you. It's just all your thoughts, you know, no filter.
Mm-hmm.
Same with stand-up, it's your thoughts, and you're responsible for how it's going to be interpreted, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, with acting, the director has his ideas of how he wants the character to be, and, you know, so there's more filter, I guess, with that, you know. And that's why I like to write and do comedy. It's, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is acting more of something that fell into, or was it more of a natural path to take because you're doing stand-up and writing?
You know, Mike Ott, when we met, he had already been making films, and when he asked to collaborate, you know, I thought it was, I didn't see why not. So, yeah, I tried it. It was the first time I really acted. It's not like I lived in L.A. and pursued acting, you know, for years and years. But I do enjoy it, yeah.
I mean, when I was watching it, like, I noticed your acting abilities. So did you have to do any... Did you have to take any acting classes? Because was that your first time acting?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I'd been in, like, a couple shorts before that, just from a film class I was taking. But, yeah, it was my first time in a feature. And, yeah, I mean, I had to review my Japanese. And it was a little different because I also had a part in writing it, so I kind of knew the script before. You know, so there wasn't super, like, a lot of preparation mentally to have to do.
Right.
It was a lot of me just reliving my own past story. So, I mean, I had to pretend, you know, I just came to the States and didn't know a word of English. So there was just, like, just a lot of reviewing Japanese going on. And Mike is really great at, you know, making sure we have enough rehearsals and going over scenes, some improvisation that makes the actors feel comfortable, you know, and not have to deliver lines in a specific way every time, like a robot.
What's your ideal acting role that you'd like to play someday?
Gosh, maybe someone really angry.
Interesting. Why?
I don't know, because I never really play that character. I am that kind of angry person when I do stand up sometimes, you know, that, like, that character that I create or whatever. But not as much as many comics. I would like to do that. I don't know, someone who, like, avenges something.
It's kind of hard to say. I mean, with this particular series of films, like, because you had a hand in writing in it, but have you ever felt that you were put in a box when you went to like acting auditions or any opportunities that came your way, and it was more like within a fixed stereotype?
Oh, sure, yeah. With auditions, all the time.
Mm-hmm.
With my commercial agent, who I was with for some time, I never got sent on a role where I got to speak English. You know, or I never got sent on an audition where I got to, for commercials. One time I went on he called me up and said I got a Little Caesars audition, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, oh, like, great, and maybe I'll eat pizza or be the delivery person or something.
Right.
They asked if I had a geisha outfit for the audition.
Oh my gosh.
And I didn't see the tie, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like, I guess they had a new pizza flavor coming out. It was like an oriental dressing on top or something like that. I don't know. But things like that. So, of course, I showed up looking like a half geisha because I've never really been a geisha or don't really wear a kimono much, you know.
Right.
So there were people who just straight up legitimately came from Japan to act that looked super authentic.
Yeah.
So, you know, I get caught up in, like, the, maybe I'm too Asian American for Asian roles, but then for American roles, I'm too Asian, you know? Yeah, I don't get that. I don't let that get to me so much. I don't really go into auditions as much anymore. You know, I concentrate on this art form that really makes me feel good, and I feel like I'm actually, I don't know, saying things to the world, maybe someone, you know, like, actually doing something for society.
Right.
Whoever got that role, you know,
yeah.
They're on TV selling pizzas as a geisha. What does that do for the society?
Exactly. I was going to say, it doesn't really advance the Asian Pacific American population here.
No. Exactly. If anything, we're adding to the problem.
Right.
You know, or I'm adding to the problem I didn't get the role. Yeah.
It's good that you stick to your morals and your beliefs, and I just think that in that industry it's so easy to kind of lose sight of that. So that's great that you kind of hold tight to that. So can you list your top three Asian Pacific American inspirations and explain why?
I don't know how many of these interviews you've done, but I'm sure Margaret Cho is like an easily easy person. But she honestly really is. The first ever stand-up I've ever seen was Margaret Cho when I was in the 9th grade. And I didn't really even know what stand-up was as an art form, you know, like people just go on stage and tell jokes. How boring, you know what I mean? And one of my friends was like, no, but you gotta check out Margaret Cho. She has this joke about how Hello Kitty, like, how does she say hi? She doesn't even have a mouth, you know? And I was like, that's great. Like, that's what she does for a living.
Right.
And I started watching her DVDs. And then, like, dug in deeper and found out, you know, she does all these, like, gay rights, you know, advocacies and the struggles she went through acting as well, you know? And so huge. There's a reason why I guess maybe she's so many people's inspiration, you know, because she's pretty incredible.
Yes, yeah.
I also, at the same time, got into reading Angry Asian Man. started realizing that there is like a place where just only Asian American things get talked about, or Asian things get talked about. I don't know. I respected that, like the research Phil puts into writing his blog and doing the research and being angry and keeping that alive. You know, the fight for. Of people that I think are usually kind of dismissed. Not dismissed, but kind of ignored, you know? Asians are always just there, right? They're not like, even like during voting and stuff, like in the polls, they never really want to know how Asians voted. They don't really care, right?
Yeah.
They're just always there. Sure, we have a few stereotypes, but they're not very exciting. At least give us something exciting. You know what I mean?
Well, we have the model minority, right? I mean,
right.
As a stereotype, like, we're supposed to be really smart at math and numbers.
How boring. You know? And you know what? We are. So, you know?
Well, I'm not. I mean, I guess I don't really fit into that stereotype, but I still get asked to crunch numbers, and I'm like, you don't really want to trust me. I don't know.
No, I would run with it and get paid and then do it. Are you kidding me? Just say yes.
Just say yes. Like, yeah, it's correct. It is.
Yeah, it's their fault. It's their fault for trusting you without even looking up your credentials or your grades.
So can you give a piece of advice to APIs who are aspiring to work in the entertainment industry?
Oh my goodness. Well, always be able to write your own stuff and write your own stories. You know, have the stories that you want to tell in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because other people don't necessarily want to tell it for you. Especially because if you wait around for a film role that will tell like a Asian American story, the struggle, the dreams, the hopes, if you wait around for that film to come out, you might never get that chance. You know what I mean? This is just for acting, I think, mostly. You have to keep your story alive, and you're the only one that could really tell it, you know. Little Caesars isn't going to do it for you. These Hollywood films that put, whatever, what's his name? Ken John or something?
Dr. Ken?
Yeah, where he's just a joke all the time. They're not going to do it. Yeah, I would find, like, a platform that you feel best where you can explore the art form that you want to while still not feeling, I guess, exploited, you know? Whether it be the stage or whether it's, like, writing groups that you find. You can form your own, like, actors' meetings or, you know, things like that. Make your own film. It's easy to say, but there's a thing called Kickstarter that helps people be raise money, you know.
Right. Yeah, so. No, that's true. It's gotten a lot of people started in that venue, and there's also YouTube, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, the interview I was just on before I came on with you was with a filmmaker, and he just raised $50,000 on Kickstarter. Yeah, and he actually casts Asians in his film as main actors, because that rarely happens to an American director who does that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and they don't, they're not just like, you know, they're actual main characters with feelings and emotions and struggles. You know, not just an extra, like the classmate, you know.
The classmate.
Yeah, the classmate or the librarian or whatever. Whatever other, like, when you walk into the world, I guess that's the only places people see Asians.
I mean, despite all of the obstacles that you face in that industry, I mean, are you happy with your career?
So happy.
So happy.
Yeah, I think I would have been even more sad if I became, tolerant of that stuff and stayed in it and then became so jaded that I lost my own vision, you know?
Right, yeah.
Because I can take a step back and not be angry. I think it's important not to be angry with this industry that exists because then you'll... And it's hard to write comedy when you're just angry. You have to have had enough time to get away from it, you know, to make it funny. You can be angry while you're on stage, like reliving it. You need space away from being angry to have perspective. I think that's the best times that artists are able to maybe create something, you know.
Thank you, Otsuko, for taking the time to speak with us today.
Of course, yeah.
Otsuko Okotsuka is the co-founder for the Disoriented Stand-Up Comedy Tour. For ticket information about the Disoriented Stand-Up Comedy Tour taking place on Saturday, October 5th at Helium Comedy Club, please check out disorientedcomedy.com. This is Luann Algoso for APA Compass.
You are here with Ka on APA Compass from Portland, Oregon, the Pacific Northwest's only Asian Pacific American public affairs radio show. Welcome. It is great to be back here on APA Compass. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, this is Ka on Heart to Heart here on APA Compass. Let's get started. Last month on my Heart to Heart, let's just do a quick review and recap. I had fun, and I hope that you guys enjoyed my show just as much as I did. I shared a letter, and then I ended the show with a question in which I asked for your help. The question was to provide an action between you and I. And so, let's check out the answers that I got. Now, I got some funny, some real, and some honest replies. The question was, what is the most surprising thing you've learned about yourself? From Diana, she said that you are strong and smarter than what you really see yourself. Sally replied and shared, the most surprising thing I've learned about myself is that I have supernatural powers. Molly said, I have no fear. Well, maybe I do, but I jump anyways. From Brian, he said that whenever I think I'm done, I still find the energy to do more. When I feel I can no longer go with the miles more, I find the inches that turns into feet to yards and miles to go. That when Brian is done, a second Brian is needed to get the job done. Simmer said, my newly found love for nature, it is a beautiful thing. Ma shared, the most surprising thing I've learned about myself is how much love one person can give. And then to end with joy, she was the last person to comment. She said that I can accomplish more when I take risk and step out of my comfort zone. So thank you, everyone who replied. I enjoy your expert advices, excellent suggestions, and insightful comments. Please keep in mind to inspire, advise, and direct me daily. My voice through the airwaves really allowed me to open up, express, and want to explore. So for my heart to heart this month, as you all know, it is that time of the season already, back to school. To keep you guys persistent and preserved for success, I would like to share some of my educational and lifelong lessons that I have learned. Here are my 5 fun facts about school. Number 5. Always eat breakfast and never pass on it. That is the most important meal of the day, and it will determine the rest of your day. Number 4. Always keep an open mind in school, subjects, people, and make new friends, because everything always seems to have its way with connecting. It is a big, small world out there. Number 3. Always do your homework. Do your research. Find role models. Reach out to the community. Keep in contact with them. Update yourself and their industry. Now this will help you stay lively and motivated. Number 2. Always be on time to class. To your job shadow, to your intern, to work. Wherever you are, be on time. It is a very important trait to have. It shows that you are dedicated and committed. And then finally, number 1, never give up. Keep trying, time after time. Find new inspiration to keep you going forward. Everything you've learned yesterday will contribute to tomorrow's success. Keep going forward on your journey. If you can't find something or someone, they will find you and your intelligence. So never give up. And good luck to a new school year, everyone. This wraps up my heart-to-heart segment. And now on to my interview with Dr. Thuy Tran. The very first thing that struck me about Dr. Thuy Tran is her warmth. I met her in February 2011 inside the Capitol in Salem. We both were joined by legislative training and luncheon and ended walking around the Capitol together with legislative visits. I got to know her within the 3 hours, and soon enough, I found out she was running for Democratic House District 47. It was a very empowering moment to hear her share with me and others that she was running for office. Through the season of her campaign, Vote for Tran, I got to volunteer and canvass, and we shared many great conversations together. Today, I'm so happy to have her join me, and I'm so honored to introduce Dr. Thuy Tran. Please welcome Dr. Thuy Tran.
Hi, Ka.
Hi. It's so great to have you.
APA Compass.
It's so great to have you here in this room. Welcome. How are you feeling today?
Oh, I'm feeling excited. Yeah, busy morning, but I'm glad I'm here with you right now.
Awesome. So can you share a little bit with me about your current roles and occupation?
Currently, I am an optometric physician at Rose City Vision Care. It is near here, near KBOO, in northeast Portland, in the Hollywood District. I've been there over 17 years. Let's see, what else? I'm active in the community there. I'm a member of the Portland Hollywood Lions Club, a community service organization in the Hollywood District. Currently, my main role is as a mother of 3. I have 3 children. Lucas is my oldest. He's 12 years old. Oscar is my second. He's 10. And Vera, my precious daughter, is 8. And it is because of them that I ran for state representative of House District 47. And again, it was because of them and all the children of the neighborhoods that I live in that I ran for the Park Row School District Board.
So recently, you became Park Row School District Board, and you're currently also in the Air National Guard.
Yes, correct? I'm a lieutenant in the Portland Air National Guard. I participate with the 142nd Medical Group.
Wow, so amazing. We're going to go ahead and I'm going to have you share with us, if you could please walk us through how you began your journey as a candidate for Democratic House District 47 and what propelled you to enter.
Many times doors open for us and it pique our interest and we just walk on through. But the reason why I ran for state representative of House District 47 was because one of my friends asked me. Mm-hmm. I was already in a mindset of wanting to do something for my community. And when my friend Joseph Santos Lyons asked, "Hey, Tui, would you consider running for state representative of House District 47? I asked him, "Oh, what's all involved? What do I have to do? And how, as a legislature, I can affect my community." Mm-hmm. But I think you have to be engaged in your community and be in a mindset of wanting to help and improve and engage with the community. So at that time, when Joseph approached me, I was an upset and frustrated mom, because what happened was Halloween of 2011, it was a Monday, and I was volunteering in my children's classroom, my daughter's class, at Russell Academy in the Park Row School District. She was a first grader. Miss Katie, one of the teaching assistants there, gave Vera, my daughter, and all her classmates lollipop. So after the volunteering day was done and I was leaving the parking lot, I rolled down the window as I was in there and asked Vera to thank Miss Katie. And conversation started and we chit-chat. And I asked Miss Katie, "Hey, Miss Katie, what are you going to be for Halloween?" And Miss Katie said, "Tui, I'm not going to be anything because I have to go to a school board. They're cutting another 5 school days from our children." And one thing led to another, and she said, "Tui, why don't you go?" Because she was not expecting a lot of parents to be at the school board meeting because it was Halloween. So I went home. And I asked my children, "Hey, children, you want me to stay home, pass out candies for your friends, or you want Mama to go to a school board meeting and try to fight for 5 school days?" And bless my children, they said, "Go, Mom." And so that night when I went, I asked the school board to consider not cutting the budget, not cutting 5 school days. However, the school board members said their hands were tied and that it was state fundings that is limiting them, that is causing them to have to balance their budget by cutting school days. And so I was very deflated and felt very helpless. So when Joseph asked me, "Tui, would you consider that?" I'm thinking, if the school board can't do it and they need money from the state, maybe I should go to the state and strive to protect my children and the children of the Park Row School District that way. So that's how it all got started.
Wow, that's amazing there. Can you go in more in depth about the significant education to you? Like, what excites you when it comes to education, despite the school funding and budget cuts?
Well, I'm a product of the public school system. My parents came with the United States in 1975. My sibling and I, 2 brother, 2 sister, mom and dad, with nothing. When we were came to the United States as refugees from the Vietnam War. So if we did not have a fabulous public school system here in the United States, I wouldn't be able to become an eye doctor. I wouldn't be able to have my own business. I wouldn't be able to serve my community. I wouldn't even be able to do what I do now for the Air National Guard as their chief of optometry. Mm-hmm. So I firmly believe that all children in the United States, as well as anywhere, should deserve the best education possible. And we do not encourage our children to skip school, right? Ditch classes. But aren't we doing this that by cutting school days? You know, first a few days and now 9 or 10 days. So it really saddens me that as taxpayer, as parents, as community member, we entrust the school system and the state to provide education for our children. Yet because budget issue, our children's school days are cut and cut and cut, not just school days, but other program like athletics and funding for TAG, Talented and Gifted Program, as well as other programs too.
So let's go ahead and turn the tables a little bit. So is there still hope? Do you see education is still the key to success?
Yes. And the more I work with an administrator at Park Grove School District and the teachers and the principal, they are amazing. They go above and beyond to help our kids, even with the cuts. Take Park Grove School District, for example. In the past 7 years, they had about 37% of their workforce cut. All right, but they are still rolling up their sleeve and working really hard. Sometimes the budget is not enough even to supply paper. And guess what? The teachers and the principal and even the superintendent out of their own pockets have to pitch in and buy paper for the children and other stationery. And that just doesn't happen if you don't love what you do and you don't love the children and you don't love the community.
Mm-hmm. So despite all the challenges, every student do deserve an education. And you are so driven by these purpose and reason. And that's what makes you so honorable. And it's like great to have you here in this room and share.
I think all of us care or have a passion or feel deeply about something. And once you do, I encourage us to just follow that love and just go and explore what we all could do to better our community, take care of our community, love our community by just helping out.
All right.
Take my Hollywood Lions Club, for example. Mm-hmm. Helen Keller challenged us to be the Knight of Sight. And so the members of the Hollywood Lions Club, they fundraise, do activity so that they can give eye care and hearing care to the people in our community that needs it. Mm-hmm. But they don't get paid for it. You know, our school board members don't get paid for it, and our legislators do not get paid very much for their work, and it's hard work too.
Yeah.
But I think there's this deep love to care for our community, and that's what, like you said, is so honorable and admirable in all the volunteers.
Yeah. So let's go a little bit more into your journey as a candidate for Democratic House District 47. So can you tell me a little bit more about the Emerge program that you were part of?
So when I ran, it was the first time I ever done anything in the public arena running for office. So I did not know what I was doing at all. And bless Joseph's heart, he made an appointment for me to have breakfast with the current House Representative Jefferson Smith. And at that breakfast, I said, what do I need to do, okay, in order to run for House Representative? And so he told me a little bit about it, and it didn't scare me. Mm-hmm. But I knew that I did not have the experience. So that is when I learned via Joseph again about the Emerge Oregon program. It is a mentoring and training program for Democratic women who would like to someday run for elected office.
Now, this all women.
And the women are just amazing. All different background from all over the state of Oregon.
Yeah, okay. So how would you describe your campaign in one word?
Grassroots.
Grassroots.
Because I did not have any experience. I did not have any connection with the union. I did not have any friendship with the legislature at that time. I was just a regular mom, a regular small business owner, a regular community service member of the community. And but what I wanted was the voice of all the parents in my community to be heard. All the voice of all the business owner, the small business owner, which I feel very strongly is the backbone of our community, to be heard. And so that was what was important to me. So my favorite part of the campaign was outreaching to the community, asking for votes door by door, engaging people to register to vote, engaging people to learn more about our political process, engaging people and educating them what it takes to be elected. You know, we need volunteers to, besides canvassing for us, knocking on doors, asking for vote, registering people, but people to make phone calls for us, helping us fund the efforts, because it's expensive to outreach the voters.
So in terms of your campaign and the creation process, what would you have done differently now that you've been through it?
I always wish I could work a little harder because I think I miss a win for the House, the state legislature, House District 47 in the 2012 primary by 355 votes. So maybe more time, work a little harder, knock on more doors. Maybe I could have
So it was a pretty close race.
It was a pretty close race.
By how many votes, you said?
355 about.
Wow. It's amazing.
Yeah, so every single vote does matter. So all those people who forgot to turn in their ballot, I needed you.
So, through your campaign, you were part of many memorable events. Can you share a little bit about the Democratic National Convention that you were part of, the experience?
Many times, as a citizen, we complain about this and we complain about that. But I, through my journey, realized that we can make a lot of difference, but we have to participate. I didn't know that as a regular person, I can participate in processes that allow me to be at the Democratic National Convention and cast a vote to re-elect our president. It was just never in my wildest dream to be at an event like that. But at that event, I saw the energy and the love that people have for our country.
Where was this national event?
It was in Charlotte, North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And people volunteer their time, pay their own way, and they learn more about the Democratic Party, what it stands for, and why it is the best for our country to have a Democratic president, this time reelected.
Okay.
Change.
Right. So despite the loss, I just want to share that, you know, you won many hearts in our community, and just being part of your Vote for Tran campaign and helping you volunteer and canvassing, I can definitely share that. I am more engaged. I'm more motivated now, and I pay more attention to it more so than ever. So this leads to my next question. How do you encourage us to experience failure, and how often do we get up and try again?
All the time. But one thing that I always have to remind myself is to not give up. Just because you don't get the result that you want, that doesn't really mean that you fail. It just means not yet. Let's fine-tune your process, get some more knowledge, get some more mentoring, and try again. And running for the Park Row School District Board was my try again. And I am able to utilize, take from what I've learned during my 2012 primary campaign, and apply it to the Park Row School District board run, and luckily or with more help from my friends and family in the community, I was able to win the election this May of 2013, this year.
That's great. So you mentioned community earlier. So what does it mean to be Vietnamese American? And how strongly do you identify that with your background to people?
Well, I am from the 1.5 generation of Vietnamese American.
So what do you mean by 1.5?
I'm really not the first generation because my parents is like the first generation. And I'm really not the second generation because my children are the second generation. So I am in a very special place. It's kind of like a stool with or a tripod with three legs. I have one leg that is planted in the history in Vietnam, the country where my mom and dad's coming from. I have a firm leg that is planted in the American community at large here because I was raised here since 9 years old. But I also have a third leg that I am able to connect those two. So I think that makes me very special because I understand the transition from being my parents' heritage, being raised in Vietnam, and then having to transition via the Vietnam War and the settling in the United States to raising my kids right now in the United States of America. So I think I'm pretty special, and the understanding that I bring to it, I think, add to the community here.
I love the tripod story that you just shared. I love it. I love
you are from the 1.5 generation, too.
Yeah, so someday I would like to unfold my tripod story, but as of now, I have no knowledge in that just yet. Great. So any new co-founded activities that you would like for us to look forward to you? The API caucus.
Well, right now I'm organizing an Asian American Pacific Islander caucus for the Democratic Party of Oregon. So any Asian American Pacific Islander out there, if you want to get involved more with the Democratic Party or just to add your voice to a body that can carry that message onward to the state level and then to the national level, please give us a call. Yeah. And we'll gladly listen.
Any last thoughts or words of inspiration to share?
Well, I think what you are doing, Kai, is fabulous. Look at this sound room right here with all the equipment. And you are venturing into an area that not very few AAPI go into, too. So I'm honored to be here with you.
Thank you. I am so honored to have you just share that. It just enlightened me. So thank you so much for giving me your time. And I just want to congratulate you on your recent achievement. Thank you for carrying aspiration and hope into the community. Thank you for being on the decision table to help make meaningful decisions for our future generation ahead. And again, thank you for your time. It's been such an honor, Doctor. So this concludes our chat.
Okay.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone.
Thanks. Please keep in mind to inspire, advise, and direct me daily. My voice through the airways really allow me to open up, express, and want to explore. So email me, Facebook, visit our website at apacompass.wordpress.com and link me up to what you know, share poems, quotes, people's stories, anything on your newsfeed. I want to hear from you. Thank you so much for your time here with Ka on APA Compass. From Portland, Oregon, the Pacific Northwest, only Asian Pacific American Public Affairs radio show. Until next time, I'm out. Love and peace.
at APA Compass are saddened by the untimely death of our friend and one of our co-founders, Afifa Ahmed Shafi. Afifa's friend and roommate, Letitia Thomas, presents this loving audio tribute.
Hello, my name is Letitia Thomas. I lived with Afifa at the Global Awareness House at Whitman College, then at the Tree House. Later on, we moved in together in San Francisco. 2 years ago, I received the huge honor and privilege of receiving Afifa and Shaquille during their trip to Europe in France. Here's my tribute to Afifa. Dearest Afifa, I was always impressed with the quality of your independence of mind, to the heights where you directed your mind and soul to rise. Thank you for filling me with the sacred love of your friendship. Thank you for what you have given me, for what you challenged me with, for what you fed me. From milk and turmeric for sore throats, to Rumi's poetry. Thank you for teaching me the greatest lesson of all. That is, you can forgive a person's actions because you never forget who they are and you always love them for who they are. You have enriched my life beyond words. I will always keep you in my heart.
In the community calendar, Portland State's Asian Pacific Islander Student Group, CAPES, sponsors a panel discussion on APIs in the media. Featured speakers include Reggie Lee from Grimm, Gio of the Blue Scholars, comedian Rex Navarrete, and Jenny Yang, co-founder of Disoriented Comedy. That's Thursday, October 3rd at 5:30 p.m. in room 327 of the Smith Memorial Student Union. The Disoriented Comedy Tour is visiting Portland. Disoriented is an all-female APA comedy group founded by Jenny Yang and Atsuko Okatsuka, who is featured at the top of today's program. There will be opportunities to socialize and network before and after the show. Funds raised will go to the terrific Asian American Women's Initiatives at Sawera and Apano. This is Saturday, October 5th at 5 p.m. in Portland at the Helium Comedy Club. Nearby Astoria was the home to a sizable population of Punjabis in the early 1900s and the birthplace of the Ghadar Party 100 years ago. The city is sponsoring a centennial celebration which features a panel discussion and three documentaries. The keynote speaker is Joe Ogden, who is credited with bringing to light the history of the Ghadar movement among Astoria Punjabis. This is on October 4th and 5th. The website, AstoriaGhadar100.org, has more details. You've been listening to APA Compass. We want to say a special thank you to our guests, Atsuko Okatsuka, Dr. Tui Tran, and Letitia Thomas. Today's program was produced by Luan Algoso, Ka Her, Tharik Mehta, and Andrew Ye. Tune in to APA Compass on the first Friday of every month at 9 a.m. here on KBOO Community Radio. If you have questions, comments, or ideas, you can connect with us through our Facebook page. Podcasts of our past shows are available on apacompass.wordpress.com. Thank you for listening to APA Compass.
Oregon's largest plant-based food event is VegFest. VegFest celebrates and promotes sustainable, compassionate, and healthy food choices and lifestyles. This event features samples of hundreds of different foods, cooking demonstrations, family and teen activities, and film screenings. VegFest is on Saturday and Sunday, starting September 21st, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. at the Oregon Convention Center, Exhibit Hall A. More information about this KBOO-sponsored event may be found at kboo.fm on the right-hand side of the homepage under Community Events.